Welcome to Vikings and Valkyries, an actual play podcast. We are playing When the Wolf Comes, an RPG etched in runes and blooded in war. My name is Ian Stewart Sharp, and I will be your ruler of treachery in the adventure ahead. Joining me for the Wolf's Feast are Bill, Steve, and CJ. Welcome to you, Dogs of Odin.
Hi.
You'll never take me alive.
Where are the red shirts?
You've run out.
Yeah. We need some victims.
Every time we present someone, no matter whether they're an artist, an author, a professor, you manage to dispense with them, sometimes within the space of the world record so far is poor Matt Forbeck with, I think, 46 minutes. You know, some people last to the end of the episode. Anyways, we've had an exciting week. CJ, I've noticed that you've not only released your audiobook version of The Fell Deeds of Fate, but you told everyone that you've decided to pack it all in for life as a full-time author in France.
That is correct. The audiobook is due on May 6th. It's going to be released by Tantor Media. And yes, I parted ways with my previous employer and I was doing some consulting. It just seemed like a good, opportune moment. My family's been working on moving back to France for a couple of years now, and we just were in a really solid position to basically just do that now.
Congrats.
Thank you.
That's fantastic.
It is exciting news, and obviously we'll look forward to using your new home as the launch pad for Viking raids around the world.
Yeah. Oh, and part of this is I'm not making this in a vacuum either. I mean, I did the books did get picked up by W.F. Howe in Europe to be translated in Swedish to start. So I'm going to be famous in Sweden soon, I think, maybe. And then I have a publisher in France, Vendelettre, who's starting a whole publishing tour.
Well, that is wonderful. Now, what I wanted to do this week before we start today is just do a little recap of your bound objects, your magic items. So what goodies have you picked up in your travels?
I think only the skull, the raven's skull.
That is true. You have in your possession the skull of Moonin.
Cigarette case.
So Air has got the ghostly cigarette case.
Yes.
I think the lion's share of the other bound objects pretty much with Gigi.
I have the god's tongue that is grafted to inside my mouth.
Yep. That enables you to detect falsehoods and speak all tongues with Kvasir's gift.
Which is fun. And then I have bear paw. That's a good one. And then I have the golden torque. When bound to the torque, the wearer gains the binding vow.
Yeah, so the idea there is similar to a Norse king or a Geatish king like Beowulf compelling people to do his bidding like that, that you now have that bestowed upon you. And so you wield the authority of the kings of old. Now, that is a lead-in for our question this week, which is also about mighty artifacts. And so the question I'm going to ask you is this. What did the sons of Ivaldi make for the gods?
Maybe my recording equipment?
Didn't they make Mim?
So you got to bear in mind the sons of Ivaldi are both an origin in this game, but they are also a mythological race of beings. That's where the origin comes from.
Oh.
So I'm talking in the mythological corpus. What did the sons of Ivaldi make for the gods?
Weapons.
Sure, they did. And it's absolutely fine if you don't know and want to pass on your inspiration point again.
I mean, if I had to take a stab at it, I would say they made weapons. And specifically, let's see, if they made weapons and you say yes, that means that I'm on the right track thinking they were dwarves, so they made Mjolnir?
They did not.
Oh. Okay, never mind.
I was convinced, CJ. Like, I was totally buying it.
I should really brush up on my Norse mythology. I haven't really looked into it in a really long time.
Why start now?
good tip for your future self, you know, and perhaps you can use the Raven Skull, go back in time, 15, 16 episodes, brush up on your Norse mythology and then come back. We will move on past the quiz in the interests of time and momentum. Our adventure this week begins alongside the funeral pyre of Beowulf, King of the Geats. The king is placed on a huge burning platform while his thanes plunder the wreckage of the Falkir, loading whatever they can into carts. The old king's remains and much of the treasure are then buried in a huge barrow constructed by his disconsolate people. Viglife does not begrudge you the king's last gift, but he urges you to return to Odin with some alacrity and curses the Norns that brought you to his land. And there's also the matter of air exploding with the strain of the last battle. Imagine him on the hilltop just going, no one is actually injured, but your fracturing reality around you certainly gives people the willies. A couple of bits of housekeeping. The first is CJ, for your honorable treatment of the refugees and the slaying of the dragon, you may add one honor to your score. It can't really go much higher, but the good news is that you are firmly established amongst the exalted heroes of the realm. Conversely, Bill, I'm going to give you one shame for refusing to heal those poor people, despite your ability to minister them tenderly. And Steve, I'm going to balance you out with no change to your honor and shame, partly because of your charity and your dragon-slaying black hole, but because you also killed the professors and set back the advance of civilization by several centuries. You're going to balance it. So no honor or shame for you. All right. Big Life, like I said, has suggested that you leave the land of the Geats, and it's up to you to work out how exactly you do that.
I propose we return to that priestess who told us to return when our task was done.
Sounds logical and frankly crazy talk.
Okay, then obviously we're on the right path. We're short one spaceship, so traveling through space is going to be a challenge. I propose we walk there.
So, Odin's V is the holy sanctuary for the Geats, where those sacrifices are offered to the gods in a clearing in the forest of oak, ash, and hazel. And the priestess, Illy, greets you at the edge of the grove, and you're delighted to see that your two Ispion cubs are playing with the hems of her robes. As you advance into her sanctuary, she says, "The skalds will sing of Beowulf's brave deeds from now until the sun grows cold."
You have no idea.
"I can now return you, huntsman, to Olfin. But first I will make you this suggestion. The Disir are close by this Mother's Night, and the spirits might decide to aid your quest. For understand this, two ravens flew from Olfin's shoulders, Hugin to the hanged, and Munin to the slain. Memory you hold in your hands, but it is thought that you must ensure comes calling."
So you mean to say that we need to find thought?
That's been our problem all along.
If only I had the thought.
"My offer to you is a simple but gruesome one. A volunteer must join the ranks of the hanged men outside the temple. Then, if you are lucky, the raven will come to the hanged one and whisper his secrets." Now, of course, in Norse society, human life was the most valuable sacrifice that the Vikings could make to their gods. We know from written sources that Odin often demanded a sacrifice by hanging and was known as the Lord of the Hanged. It's just up to you as to whether you wish to seek the advice of the Disir.
How does the sacrificing work? Is they just hung by the neck from a tree branch?
When you entered the grove last time, you saw all manner of beasts hanging. Some hens, some horses, some people, some dogs, all hanging from the trees in nooses. And yes, she did cut them and spray blood, such as the fun nature of sacrifice to the gods.
Does it have to be a human?
Certainly has to be someone who has an esophagus, because...
I'm out.
You would just effectively form a pendulum.
Yes, I would just be an ornament on this. That's,
I was going to ask if they had any really strong ropes so we could hang air. Him not die.
I don't think it'd be effective as a sacrifice. Perhaps we could find a volunteer.
We could find a volunteer, but we've arrived with none. We killed them all. The one of you is a rock, one of you is a tree. There's only one option. It's me.
Or you can forgo this kind offer from the priestess and, you know, simply make your own way home.
Lyomi?
Yeah?
We know now that you're well-versed in the healing arts.
Indeed.
Hypothetically, our friend and our revered Jarl here were to sacrifice themselves, could you later undo the effects of it?
I don't know that I've ever raised someone fully from death.
I'm hoping not to sacrifice him to death.
Just to the point where he's almost dead.
Just to discomfort, maybe.
He can claim he's feeling better.
Or bliss. Yeah.
Or what?
Bliss. Hang from the neck until you are blissful.
I'm sure it'll be fine. I mean, I'm pretty sure. It's probably not a risk. I expect he'll come back no problem.
Is it hanging from the neck, or is it hanging from the tree and then other things to try and kill me? I'm not sure.
I will not pierce your side with a spear, if that is what you mean. Rest assured, should you venture into the spirit realm and descend to hell, I can bring you back with my incantations, for I know the spell to awaken the dead.
Well, that sounds like a yes.
Every hero must die and be reborn. This is my chance. Let's do it. Apostasis it is.
You are hung by the neck and dangle from the branches of a great oak tree in the grove. Your eyes bulge in your skull and your throat goes taut as you gasp for breath. The world goes entirely black. The priestess proceeds to paint runes in blood all over your corpse and utter strange incantations to resurrect you from the dead. And you recall nothing of this experience at all, apart from seeing a huge raven approach as the noose is tightened, and then moments after Ely finishes the spell, you open your eyes and immediately utter three pieces of advice that appear to have been delivered directly from Hugin itself. Would you care to tell us what those pieces of advice are?
The sons of Evaldi carved runes on the tip of Ganungir and stole the wings of Hugin and Moon, and to defeat your foe you must call forth the Landvatir, compelled by law and deed. The weaver's web holds your deliverance.
Spooky.
I thought I'd go full Norseman on that one.
Those cryptic words of wisdom, such as they are, may well enable you to conclude this adventure and the campaign.
I caught parts of it.
Yeah.
Zizi is still waking up. He's going, where am I? What happened?
Ooh.
I'm thirsty. Does someone have a drink?
Ely plans to use the Doors of the Dead spell to send you home, but she says that without a clear destination, the wreck of the Falkir or rather the lair of the dragon, is vital to the spell's success. She divines that that's what is meant by the weaver's web holds your deliverance.
So Odin's spear is Gungnir, is it?
Yeah, yes, it is.
and so
what's Landvetir?
Spirits of the land in the old Nordic religion.
Yes, I've seen a magic book with them drawn in there. They look like aliens.
Funnily enough, they look like Steve and Bill. We've referred to you all as Landwites, as Landvetir,
throughout the whole saga.
You perhaps hold the secret to your success, compelled by law and deed. What documents do you possess that may compel the spirits of the land?
Huge coincidence. Says there, I happen to have a deed.
Yes.
What are the chances?
You do. I see all. I know all. Now, you must wear hell shoes made from the remains of your ship. That will enable you to return to Lord Odin.
Okay. Anyone here good at making shoes out of spaceships?
I buy shoes. I don't make them.
I didn't actually take that.
Well, I'm just checking if cobbler is one of my past life skills.
You have a profession. I don't.
How quaint.
Really? What have you done with your time?
I'm a yofor. We study and read and win at Tonga Honk.
So I'm still enjoying the GM hitting us over the head with deed, law, and deed, 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 and then eventually.
I didn't realize 6th century Europe had deeds.
Luckily, this is a seeress with a command of past, present, and future, and insights into all kinds of things that are going on in this campaign. Now, it's not necessarily a case that you have to cobble yourself together some shoes of ironwood, but merely taking something that will enable her to anchor the spell on a destination and a time, that's the vital ingredient. So you can simply strap on pieces of ironwood hull to your feet, a bit like impromptu sandals, and then when you are ready, Ely will open the greenways and send you back to Heimsleck, ready to face the future. Of course, she doesn't know that that's what she's doing. She has only a very vague notion that she is returning you to where you belong. She thinks you are part of Othin's Wild Hunt and that you will be returning to Asgard.
Okay, we shall return to the ship, I suppose, and find some bits.
I guess,
like,
should we all
coffee machine?
Yeah.
And the popcorn maker, one on each foot.
It's a good thing we blew it up good, because now there's quite a lot of debris to select from. All right, well, yeah. I guess I'm going to strap some remnants onto my footsies.
Ailey says to you, just before she begins to cast the spell, she says to you, Leomi,
did you want to say goodbye to your bear cubs?
Yes, please. Yes, please. We have traveled far with them, and they have never been far from my thoughts, even if occasionally slipping from my memory.
And occasionally, well, that's one of the problems of having memory loss as a character and as a player. It goes hand in hand.
Wait, shouldn't we take them with us? They could grow up and devour your ancestors, my ancestors. We shouldn't leave them here.
I think they would be happier here. I think they'll be safer here. They've been through much. The world
are
is
you
younger.
Not listening? They could devour our ancestors. They could devour yours.
There could be a sproutling. Yes. Well, listen, I'll talk to one of them and make it clear they're not to do that. And I think they're bears of great wisdom. I think it'll be just fine. So I'll use my bird charm's gift to say farewell. And also, Gigi, I will make sure they don't eat your ancestors. But you don't really have any. You were born in a test tube, weren't you?
Someone had to make the test tube.
Yes. Okay. All right. And so no glass makers then either. No one working in the crafts at all.
We'll assume that you're just emanating love, care, and compassion towards these bears.
Aww.
The priestess continues her incantations, and before you know it, you reel, tumble, and fall through the greenways. For a moment, you are lost in a giant arboreal maze, a place of visions. Up above you, the northern lights crown the majestic tree with their haunting motion. Generations of your ancestors hang from its branches like brittle leaves, mouthing silent warnings through starved lips. And then you thump onto ice and rock, the wind knocked out of your body, except for air, obviously, or possibly from Leomi as well. In actual fact, CJ, you're the only one that has the wind knocked out of your body. The Norse call it stakra, staggering, because the journey feels exactly like trying to run when five flagons into a feast.
I guess we should determine when we are.
Yes.
And I guess we should determine where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose we might as well try to figure out who we are.
And how.
And how.
And how.
And, yes. And why.
One I'd forget. And why. Well, I'm not sure there's any answer for that.
That's the biggie, yeah. Is the landscape, like the general shapes of the landscape, familiar to where we left? You know, have we just moved only in time, or have we also moved in place?
Mm.
That is a very good question. You are in the middle of a very dark forest during the polar night. There is no glimpse of light in the sky, just uninterrupted darkness. The frigid air bites at exposed skin, and every noise seems amplified in the silent, eerie stillness. Surrounding you are trees that loom like icy sentinels, an old-growth forest that you recognize as being near the southern shore of the World's End archipelago.
The scar in the sky is gone?
The scar in the sky has indeed gone.
Well?
Are we home?
The last time you were in the Ifrit Forest, you spied this old man beckoning you, and you promptly ignored him. But this is a knot. This is like one of the gates to the greenways, although it's been locked tight, and the whole area, you remember, is cordoned off with razor wire and warning signs, partly as an attempt to protect the trees from the effects of glaciation, but also perhaps to stop people using this method to travel off-world. Before you can properly get your bearings, however, you notice a hooded, visored figure lurking in the forest beyond. For we have a special surprise guest star.
Hello, boys.
Hello.
I've been waiting for you to get back. I'm glad you're all in one piece.
Now, wait just 1 minute. Last I saw you, you went flash, and you were gone. Where did you go?
Well, my body disappeared, darling, but my entire intelligence can be downloaded into a new one. Do you like it? And as you look closely, she's showing not just blue, but yellow robes.
It's lovely.
Thank you. I think it suits my hair a bit better, don't you? Now, before we kind of get down to business, because I know we're in danger, can I ask, do you have it? Is it secret? Is it safe?
A thought? No, none.
She's just sadly not looking at Gigi at this point. Do you have the skull? Do you have the raven skull? Is it safe?
Yes, we have it still.
Would you mind showing me it? I've heard of it, but I've never actually seen it.
All right. Naomi holds it out for her to see.
It's so small. Can I just hold it for a second?
I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I heard yellow robes. Are those yellow Sons of Ivaldi-styled robes?
You'll remember that. The Sons of Ivaldi wear robes according to their bank balance.
Okay.
So, for example, when you last met Bryn, of Valdi's daughter. She was Bryn Blar. That means blue. You've met various other characters like Bangsy. Bangsy is the white. Bangsy Fitter of Valdison. And so, you know, depending on how much wealth they have, their clothes change. And also, you remember that you saw past Bangsy on Mimisbrunner wearing green robes. In the present, he was always adorned with the finest white ermine.
I think I'll just hold on to the skull for now. You've seen it.
Really, you can trust me. I'm not going to run off with it. I could have had you all rounded up by now, if I was.
How did you know to wait for us here?
Good question.
And now?
Good I'll question. Do. And why?
Why? Because when I returned, I learned you'd all gone. And I was like, well, where could they have gone? So I have, amongst other things, been trying to look out for you guys.
But here, in the dark forest, in the middle of nowhere, in the eternal night?
Can we see the skull you have?
Oh, I don't have one, unfortunately, darling. I'm not that important yet.
We're all making faces. It's such a shame there's no video for the recording. We've all got our faces.
He's just crossing his arms.
Yep.
Could you give us one moment, please?
And Gigi's going to huddle.
Whisper.
He's going to huddle and whisper with the rock in the tree.
That's what it does.
I don't remember much from the dream, but I remember the Sons of Vivaldi being the bad guys. We should be careful.
Yes.
She seems nice, but devils often show up as small girl-like children.
And we don't know what else has changed. We can't assume everything's going to be the way we left it. Things might have changed. I mean, you know, in case we had an influence on the present through our actions in the past.
Also, we seem quite nice. But a lot of people have died all around us.
Yeah.
Including her.
At this point, you're going to hear a snowball from behind you all, and it gets louder and more manic, and evolves into one of those maleficent cackles. And she'll say, well, there might yet be a moat of intelligence between you all yet, but my patience is short, and so is my time, and my time is money, so... if you're not going to hand it to me, I will have to take it. And she almost whistles a little bit like fetching a dog.
Bad Bryn, as we call her, is not alone. Through the trees, you see a huge hulking war machine splinter through the forest as it guns the area with automatic fire, the flashes of the gun muzzle lighting up. Polar night. In the darkness beyond, you also see through the trees our cybernetic soldiers, presumably of the Church of 10, literal converts to their machine god. They sprint with unnerving speed through the snow, modified for increased performance and rapid response to threats. They take cover behind the ancient trunks, firing short bursts as they advance.
What a compliment! An entire division just for me? I must be dangerous.
Before we go too much further, obviously we're joined again by the delightful Becky Hill, who is reprising her character as the clone Bryn Evaldi's daughter. Before we go on, we paused at the beginning of the episode because I asked the quiz question and... our intrepid trio here, Becky, surprisingly weren't able to get it. But being related to the Sons of Vivaldi, the great Vivaldi, I'm going to ask you the question now and see whether you can earn the inspiration point for using the battle ahead. So the question is this. What did the Sons of Vivaldi make for the gods?
If I remember correctly, there was a ship that could fold like a handkerchief for the god Frey. There was the spear Gungnir for Odin. And then I think they made the thing that was what was really wanted was Sif's golden hair, since Loki cut it off.
That is correct. The inspiration point is yours. Yes, they did indeed fashion Skifbladnir, the flying ship of Freyr, Gungnir, the spear that never missed, and yes, Sif's golden hair to replace that which Loki had cut off. And CJ, just to double back to your comment earlier about weapons, Mjolnir was actually made by two dwarves, Brokkr and Iter, along with Draupnir the Ring, and it was made after a bet saying that Brokkr and Eitri couldn't make better gifts than the three already made by the Sons of Ivaldi. So Mjolnir was subsequent to the devices, the artifacts that Becky, as our Norse expert, delivered. So,
I want to make sure I understand. So we failed to get the inspiration point, and now our enemy has got the inspiration point, as well as the division of specialized constructed soldiers. I just like to know the odds.
That's exactly right. And I'm going to remind you of a couple of things right at the top of the episode. I did introduce myself as the ruler of treachery.
Well, we always thought of you as that anyway.
Yeah.
Becky, we're going to consider this a surprise round, because whilst these gentlemen are in their huddle working out what on earth is going on with the appearance of your clone, we're going to let you sock it to them.
Very good. Well, in that case, I would like to initiate my triggered action of Skyshine.
It doesn't sound good already.
Becky has availed herself of the opportunity to use the Death Metal expansion and take a character from there called a Flame Keeper, who uses the Hellstones, the radioactive material that the Dark Elf found in Mine 7, or wanted from Mine 7, and she's now using it for her own nefarious gain.
So she takes out a stone from her pocket, and it looks very much like something volcanic, almost like a meteor, and it pulses. And from its pulse emits a blue light, and it emits a blue light that surrounds her from head to foot in a perfect, almost like perfectly fitting bubble. And it partially obscures me, makes me look a bit blurry. That's my sky shine, which you will...
You're surrounded by a radioactive shroud.
This is fine.
All right. That was your triggered action. What was your main action?
And then for my action, she is going to extend forth that stone and mutter some words that you may or may not understand, and she will summon forth her Iron Storm spell. Go for
I'm going to ask our unsuspecting dupes to make a roll as an eerie purple glow spreads through the area, turning the darkness into shadows. Two things. So, first of all, you're all going to take 5 damage.
100 damage? No, 5 damage. Okay. Yep.
Just 5 damage. And then, if you could all make a might challenge roll, please.
16.
Okay, in which case, CJ, halve that damage to 3.
I got a 10.
7.
Okay. A 10 is enough for Leomi to also halve the damage, so 3 damage. But air
explodes.
Not only takes that full damage, but also becomes both fatigued and slowed by the Ion Storm. So that's going to mean your rolls are subject to one woe, and being slowed, you can only take a slow turn.
Well,
now the cybernetic soldiers that are sprinting through the tree line are a little bit too far away, but the huge hulking war machine is closer. And just for background, because you know these war machines are Dvergh, they are war bots, and this particular one is called a Battle Brand. It's manufactured by Lugar Hofford Martin, as an affordable countermeasure alternative designed to optimize the man-machine team interface and mitigate direct threats to the warfighter. And it comes with a handy 30-day money-back guarantee and refund policy. Anyways, these Vigvel or war machines, which were once spurned as not being particularly Norse, they're now a commonplace stationed across the New Heimar, and Bryn has one at her disposal. It fires at you with a howling dog. And you all please take 17 damage.
Is it a creature that is bigger than size 2?
It is a huge great machine thrusting its way through the trees.
I would like to use Outwit. When a creature larger than you attacks you, you can use a triggered action to make a slight challenge roll. On a success, you impose 3 woes on the triggering roll.
You may do so. The only thing I'm going to say is because it's full auto, he's not actually made a roll. In what I was going to say is that you can all make a slight roll to take half of that damage. Ah.
We'll just do that.
Yeah. Should you have any abilities or gifts or items, you may well consider using them then.
I was trying to, well, yeah.
How much damage? How much damage are we taking?
I said 17.
And I can have that?
You can have that if you make a slight roll successfully.
Yeah, rolled a 17 on mine, so I'll have that, which I think, my math's not strong, but I'm thinking that's another 3.
I rolled a 15.
Should I try using, I'm talking to my team now, should we try using the skull to like get us back before the betrayer appeared?
I was waiting for my turn to ask that. I was going to have Gigi turn on a slow turn and said, Naomi, could we use the skull to go back an hour to before our arrival? However, would that take us back to the Geats?
That's what I'm worried about, yeah.
50 minutes before we arrived in this forest so we can go get some reinforcements.
Yes.
Do we try it?
Yes.
Yes. Because it's not, it doesn't look like it's going to go our way right now.
Yes, I'm flattered by the entire army sent to kill me, but yes, we should try something different.
You don't have to go back the whole hour.
Yes, we do.
All right, so how long have we been in the present time that we're now in? Because I don't have a sense.
I think if you just stepped back in time using the Raven's Guard, just 10 minutes to when you popped out of the greenways and Bryn, Evaldi's daughter, is there waiting for you, she'll still say, hello, boys. But at that point, you can perhaps take a slightly different approach.
Something smarter. I wonder what that would be.
You are level 10, you have a range of abilities and you have a range of objects. So feel free to have an epiphany at any moment.
Well, you know, it's your optimism that I most appreciate.
Before stepping into the greenway, Air would cast Ancestral Wisdom on himself because something traumatic is bound to happen. Actually, he should get to the point where he just does that first thing in the morning.
While he's brushing his diamond encrusted teeth.
Yeah, it's just something horrible is going to happen. I just know it is.
Are we in a place where we would be aware of how far we are from our old friends, the other rock people, the dwellers of the earth, aka the Landvit here?
You do have
good question.
A map in your campaign stuff, then?
Yes, so as Gigi consults the map.
You are yes, you are in the Ithir Forest.
Is that close or is that far?
It's very close to where you met Daniel in Spickball. In actual fact, the last time you passed the Ithir Forest, you saw an old man stroke a bear and refused to have anything to do with it.
Yes. But wait, didn't the other Dark Alpha say they're watching us all the time?
They did. and I think my people will be keenly interested, well, in the deed, obviously.
So could you commune with them and say we need help? Lots of it.
Yes, commune.
And tell them I'm dreadfully sorry for killing their chieftain and a few other people, including the seer in your ear.
Question for you, Gigi. When you inevitably become Jarl, I wonder if we could make a deal wherein you are Jarl of everything on the surface and my people have the mineral rights to everything under. I think I could float that past them.
Yes, whatever it takes.
In fact, I think Air could ask the seer in his ear whether or... Okay, maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves here.
Why don't we part the division of the spoils of the land until such time as you've dealt with the immediate threat, which is a platoon of the Sons of Avaldi, led by a familiar face.
It's important to recognize that we are multifaceted idiots. There's a lot going on here.
Yeah. We're multitasking. Idiots in a number of different ways at the same time.
We're not just stupid in one direction. That'd be very unfair.
Like an onion.
Yeah, that's true. We like an onion. Yeah, that someone stepped on and it's a bit old.
Okay.
Hey, Steve, you figured it out. So what should we do?
So we're still going to arrive at the same place with Bryn waiting for us. We can't do anything about that. So if that's the case, then the moment we arrive and see Bryn, we open fire.
Why change the habit of a lifetime?
It seems a bit subtle for us.
I could use the god's tongue to have a chat with Bryn and perhaps talk us out of having to fight to the death, which would go our way. I'm certain of it.
Yeah.
It's for them.
So the god's tongue would enable you to determine whether she was speaking the truth.
That could be useful.
But she hadn't said any, she hadn't even really made any statements other than she wanted the skull, which I think we know was truthful.
But the army didn't show up until she did her maniacal laugh. So if I talk to her, call her out on her lie, and then distract her by telling her how very, very bad she's being by lying, that could buy us a little bit of time to prepare better.
Oh, so stupid.
I'm going to cast sharp runes. No, wait. Not sharp runes. I have a better one now. Bloody runes on my shaker.
Steve, you were in the process of having some kind of brainwave.
Yeah, it doesn't happen often. Air has the new ability called Law Speaker that allows him to construct a legal argument that forces another creature to comply with your wishes. But it only lasts for one round. Yeah, it was a great plan until I got to the last for one round part. And I was trying to think if there was a way to use that. And apparently it killed Bill.
I feel that you are very slowly feeling yourself towards a solution. If only you had something that represented the bonds of kinship.
All right, Gigi is going to use Binding Vow.
Oh.
From the thing from that he got from Beowulf. And so here, I'll read it so that you guys know what it is. So you demand a solemn oath of undertaking. When you spend at least 1 minute talking to a creature that can hear and understands what you say, make a wits attack roll against the target's will. On a success, you may describe a course of activity that is obviously not suicidal, and that can be summarized in a sentence or two. So basically, I can make her make an oath to me to do something for me. So Gigi could just say, so I have this new ability. I could have her make an oath to me, and that oath could be to not kill us.
And not take our things, though, because we don't want to give up the skull.
And go or away.
Obey you. I could construct some legal... well, let's face it, bullshit, that will compel her to agree to that deal, briefly.
What? But you don't need to, you see, because I have a magical object that will compel her to do what I say. So I could send her on a mission to... Oh, I have an idea. I will send her to go find Bot, the other Raven Skull. Go fetch it for me.
Fetch. Nice.
By the way, she's probably hearing everything that she's saying right now, the entire plan.
Yes.
I've just got a vision of time paused around you three having this pretty deep internal discussion about...
That's very kind of you.
...options.
It's so good to see you. Can I cast it? I'm trying. I'm going to do it.
So, first of all, you have to spend at least a minute talking to her. Making a wits attack roll against the target's will. So, Bryn, what is your will?
My will score is 11.
Okay, so you're going to have to roll on 11, and before you do so, since she's got the inspiration point and you don't, can I suggest that you arm yourself with as much guidance or legal counsel or any abilities that you can throw at this to make sure that that roll goes your way, because otherwise you've got the equivalent of gunfight with the OK Corral.
Guest counsel usually gets one wheel.
Can I provide guest counsel as well? I was a thing that had to do with stuff. Hang on one second.
You were a thing.
I was a Reeve magistrate, so yeah.
I'm just going to make that into a woe just because.
It's so mean.
Yeah.
What do you want to do then, CJ? What is the quest that you're going to compel Bryn to perform?
All right, so how many wheels or woes do I have on this roll?
Guidance can give plus two wheel.
Yes, counsel. That's
three wheels.
So while they're doing that, Gigi's going to show up and see Bryn and say, Bryn, what a delightful surprise!
Hello, boys. I've been waiting for you to get back.
We haven't seen you in forever. The last time I saw you, you disappeared into a flash of light. It's so good to see you. You won't believe all the things that we've seen in the past since we've last met. Oh, by the way, is that a new color on your robes? That's incredible. Where did those come from? And this is just going to keep going for a minute. And meanwhile, he's going to roll. Woo!
Flattery. I'll get you everywhere.
Highest was 4, so total of 19.
Very good. Well, that will be enough to use the binding vow of Beowulf's Talk to compel Bryn to perform a task that you set her. Now, it's up to you to use that task wisely, because...
This is where the plan gets weak.
She could be a valuable informant.
Well, hearing kind of like the friendly overtones from Gigi and then the magic underlying that conversation, you'll see her original kind of like stern but serious face changing to the more amicable, gentle little geeky scientist that she was when you first met her all those moons ago. And she will appear quite shocked that you're all here, because she will then remember what's lurking in the trees behind her. And she will start saying, you shouldn't be here. You need to leave. You need to go. You need to take the skull somewhere safe.
Speaking of skulls, do you know where the other one is?
Unfortunately, I don't. I'm not. As you notice, my colours have changed, but I don't have that kind of knowledge. Unless, I don't know, there might be a way. What I do know is that you can't go any further beyond these trees. There's a whole battalion of, well, what can we say, followers, so to speak. Of that church, the 10, they're looking for you and obviously the skull that you have.
What has changed? What are the Sons of Vivaldi up to right now?
The plan that she reveals to you, because she has the inside information as to what the Sons of Vivaldi are up to, is that they have been using the cloak of this Fimbulwinter, this great winter, in order to rebuild Mim in their image in order to help their ascension to godhood. And in the same way as that rare earth minerals are needed for today's iPhones and smart TVs, they are also using the vast polar wealth to help create the new version of Mim and power it with the skulls of Hugin and Munin, which effectively act as the CPU and the RAM. So you can think of the Raven skulls as an integral part of this new Norse supercomputer that they were building in Sokvabekka, but now have relocated to the Firefox Institute. She also reveals to you that some of the soldiers, the cybernetic soldiers that you saw there, are people who, as I mentioned, are literally converted to the Church of the 1-0, not just here in the sense of their faith, but they have been grafted with the same cybernetic components that the Sons of Ivaldi sport in order to turn them into superhuman soldiers.
Almost a sort of, cybermen.
There you go.
Hachi, what about the townspeople? Are they being converted against their will, or what are they doing? Are they in danger?
Yes, the townspeople are in danger. They're all being converted one by one. No one's getting a chance to say no. They're all going under the same process.
So we approach the town, we're going to make it worse. So Air now has the ability to sit and concentrate for a minute and think about a place where he has been within 100 miles. And at the end of that time, he will now have a vision of that place as of right now. You'll be able to see what's going on there right now. So if we were to look in on somewhere, where would that be? Would it be the Institute or the church? Or, the Church of the 1-2?
The Church of the 1-0.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite easy to remember because it's binary. See? 1-0, the Church of the 1-2.
I'm a man made of stone. I don't understand this.
That's the dancing church, the Church of the 1-2.
Of the 5-6-7-8.
Yes. take these waltz.
And shove it.
So if we were to look in on somewhere, any suggestions? No. Okay.
All I recommend is the Firefox Institute. That's where MIM is. That's where the new MIM is being built. You can see the progress or lack of, because without that skull, there's a bit of a problem. So they're trying to fix it as best they can.
So the Chair of the Norns spell will enable you to effectively scry as if you had a palantir. You visualize a place, which you've seen at least once, like you said. That could be all of Hapmakar itself, so you could get a full sense of what is happening in the town. You would be able to, should you find a position of safety, because you are about to be inundated by an elite troop of overclock warriors. But then, you know, once you were able to concentrate, you could use that Chair of the Norns to see what the town was like, and then plan your strategy.
So you can see the whole town, it's not just a ground POV sort of thing. So let's deal with the armored division coming our way, and then we have options.
I do have a question for Bryn.
Please ask.
How did you know we were going to be here and now?
I was sent here, Gigi, because Bangzi knows you're coming. He knows where you are. He can see things a lot further than, I don't know, Leomi or Air can. He's got some ability, some very strong ability. So this is why I was here. It's all planned, and I was following orders.
I wonder if he knew you would fail.
Remains to be seen. We still need to get you guys away from what's in those woods. They're waiting on my signal.
Then the oath that we should have her take is to take the army off on a wild goose chase that way, pointing in a random direction. That way, that way. Up, down, left, right, north, south, away from the town. That's a given.
And away from us, like off a cliff, for instance, would be great.
And that shall give us enough time to recruit our good friends, the Lundvetir. We could raise an army of our own, since there were so many of them.
What a good idea.
I could certainly
Army of abominations.
Sounds pretty
they
good.
Have an army. We'll have an army. And then we will pay this Bang Z a visit.
I feel like the oath needs to be really specific. Like, take them away, run them off the cliff, and then disappear.
Oh, wait, no. We could make it even better than that. Have her swear an oath to protect our lives with everything she's got.
Including them.
From everything. That way she's loyal to us to the end. We keep us on her good side. And then and then we can keep her as a free agent to, like, keep helping us down the road. So you shall now swear an oath to me to protect me with your life in all circumstances.
And help you with your plan.
And to help us with our plan.
Using all the resources at your disposal.
Using all the resources at your disposal.
Very well. I so swear.
Couple of things then.
Yeah.
If the suggested activity would be potentially harmful for you, you can make another will challenge roll and is not affected on a success. And so looking after being a babysitter for these guys is known to be one of the most harmful occupations on Midgard. So give it another roll. So this is a will challenge roll.
Mm-hmm. That's 9 + 1 is a straight 10.
Well, you know what? She shrugged off the binding vow.
So screwed.
Because you made it potentially harmful to her, it is no longer ironclad. And she may wriggle out of it.
I mean, that was our best plan ever.
Yeah. Failed immediately.
Yeah, but still it was good. Good while it lasted.
I liked it. It had, yeah.
Yeah.
It felt good.
Can I keep talking to her for another minute and cast it again?
She's now immune. However, events now, luckily for you, intervene. As in the pitch darkness, you hear a distant thunder growing louder and more insistent. The air carries a sharp cold breeze infused with metallic tang of adrenaline and the musky scent of bear fur. As they draw nearer, the ground vibrates more fiercely with the weight of Isbjorn charging through the darkness. There's a fainter underlying sound too, leather creaking and armor rattling with each stride of the massive beasts. Suddenly, the night air is pierced by the song of the Alphar as the scions of Yggdrasil burst into the fray, scattering the lurking enemy from atop their ursine steeds. Bryn, it's probably a good time for you to swear, insult these chaps, and run off into the night as your ambush has been detected by the Alphar of the region and thwarted.
You're all blundering idiots. You couldn't even get me on your side. I will see you later, and she runs off into the forest.
Till the next time.
Thanks for making it worse.
Thank you for not killing me. I appreciated you all trying not to kill me, but I totally respected you if you had, so it's all good.
Technically, we certainly gave it a good think.
Yeah.
All right.
That went better than planned.
Yeah.
Went better than expected.
Well, mostly because somebody else saved us, but, you know.
It went.
The Alpha astride there is beyond mounts. Rear in front of you, and you can smell the fetid, fishy breath of the polar bears. From atop one of the mounts, you hear a familiar voice. Brother, mine eyes deceive me, for I reckoned thee claimed by the merciless winter tempests. How dost thou tread upon this earth, still amongst the living?
Hail, brother, we have traveled far beyond imagining and had adventures beyond imagining, but protected and guided by the great spirits of the world and of reality, we've come back. How fares thee? You have an army.
Indeed, brother. Hark unto me, for the sons of Avaldi, shrewd and cunning, did purchase the land from amongst those garbed in the rags of fortune, and thereupon commenced to raise a stronghold grand. In a cavern deep as the bowels of the earth, they labor to shape fate against the impending doom. Indeed, the drift has shown itself a sanctuary most fortuitous, cradled far from the clashes of men, stable as ancient stone, and nestled high beyond the grasp of the swirling seas, tunneled profound in yon steadfast mountain.
Did you say they bought the land from someone?
Indeed I did, from the former Jarl. The man you know as Finnbogi Asbjornsson, he fell upon hard times.
Did you also say, honored cousin, that they're building their project underground?
Indeed, such was the case. In their fortified vault, Bangzi, ever persuasive, hath moved the Empress to house the whole of the Imperial lore within its cold embrace.
And perhaps my people could help us get to it without going through the town. Perhaps they know of a way underground to this abomination they're creating. And it takes one to know one, I get that. And to this abomination they're creating under the ground.
That may be so, if you wish to throw in your lot with the forces of darkness.
Well, kind of judging a bit here.
One question. Did we fulfill the deal we made with them that allowed us to escape the last time? They asked us for something. I cannot remember what that was. They wanted something. Did we do that thing?
They asked you to secure the rights to Mind 7 indeed, and indeed all of the rights, especially Air. That was his original mission, the reason he was sent forth from their dark elf enclave, in order to secure the radioactive materials, the hellstones that Bryn just demonstrated the efficacy of.
So, result.
We have the deed. Therefore, we have the power to give them those rights. We must simply assert them. But the sons of Vivaldi appear to have bought something.
They think they have. So, we need to speak to my people, I think.
We also have my brother, the Alfar, with a whole army of Alfar on Isbjorn. I mean, maybe we could think of something to do with them. If nothing else, we could put them in front of us.
Perhaps it would be helpful for me to take a moment to commune with things and catch a vision of what's happening in Helpmakar right now. That may help guide our choices. Sorry, brain short-circuited, trying to think. We'll edit this out. Or not.
Oh, no. I like to keep them in.
There was a narration. At this point, the party hit themselves trying to think.
If Ian wanted to, he could deliver a blooper collection that's longer than the entire series.
I will summarize for you before you
implode.
Before you sit on your chair of the norms. I will remind you that the spirits of the land include both the Dock Alpha and the Loss Alpha. They also include those who have a prior claim based on blood and soil, which would be the Jotnar of Spikborg, your good friend Daniel. You haven't seen for many episodes, but certainly they might come to your aid. Or a fourth potential beneficiary would simply be the Jarl-in-waiting, Grokov the Magnificent, who did have some kind of claim, although it would need to be legitimized through his heroic deeds and sealed by the Empress herself were it to become official. You effectively have four choices. They are embrace the Dark Alpha, align with the Los Alpha and the Isbjorn, to work with the Jotnar of Spikborg, the Wailing Giants, or to bet on CJ and his ability to carry the day single-handed.
I mean...
I vote number four.
Heir, you still have a wife among the Jotnar. I mean, surely that's an advantage. You must be dying to see her again.
I'd also like to point out the irony, because I felt so bad over these past few episodes that we play the ride of the Valkyries at the beginning of every episode, and then CJ wants to ride everything that he possibly can. And so I gave him a great hulking war robot to jump on, and for the first time ever, he didn't jump on it.
Oh, I thought about it. He was thinking about it. He was like, oh, I want to jump, but dying was imminent.
He's grown. He's grown. He's more restrained, more thoughtful, deeper.
He has layers. Another onion. If the town is an armed camp and we attack overland, they might wipe out the townsfolk. That can't be honorable, letting that happen. Certainly not, you know, there'll be no one left to sing songs about you. We can't have that.
Can you remember, Steve, just how well you left relations with your kinsmen?
Wasn't great. I believe their leader's body.
Yeah. You are roaming around in Red Gold's body. You stole, like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Borrowed. Are you giving it back?
I liberated. Well, they were going to kill us, so I thought it worked out
you
fine.
You recycled, reused.
I'm trying to find a way through this that doesn't screw Air's own people, and I'm having some trouble.
Okay. Might be your fastest way back to Valhalla.
There's a poem where it's about, like, you know, who, how did you get this land? My father gave it to me. Where did he get this land? His father gave it to him. How did he get this land? He fought for it, right? Mm-hmm. So there's the whole idea that to make Zizi the Jarl, it requires the seal of the Empress, but since we're in a pinch and she's not on planet, then just say Zizi's the Jarl and go around and recruit all the armies and bring them together and fight the Sons of Vivaldi, and then with the promise of once it's all said and done, everybody kind of, you know, you split up all the stuff the way that they want. We have the deed, so we technically have that power. And then if we don't, well, you know, we still win.
So you're taking a swing at a sitcom ending where everybody ends up happy and it all works out and we freeze on the final shot of everyone laughing in joy.
Yes, and then we get to do a montage of recruiting armies, right?
I'm in.
Yeah.
Okay.
It did sound a bit like the Battle of the Five Armies. If you know any eagles.
But four of them will be on our side.
Gigi, how do we make this work for you?
Well, I'm already a Jarl. I have land. I have possessions. I have bear paw. Claw. Paw.
Bear claw.
Bear claw. Paw.
I have Fittenbergi's sword. And we have the deed to the land.
Mm-hmm.
Now we shall declare me Jarl of this entire land, wherever the light doesn't touch.
I like it.
With me.
I second the motion.
Let's do it.
Let's ride for Gigi, second place in the honky tonk.
Silver medalist in the toga honk. It'll be gold next time. I'm level 10 now.
You might earn a new polar star. Let's do the Chair of the Norns stuff to help you with your deliberations. So now from the relative safety of this frozen forest, you can try and locate the secret Avaldian facility that is housing this newly rebuilt MIM 2.0. There's a few flashes of inspiration that perhaps will come to you. That is, you remember that you saw the room master, Rauda Serdan, on the space station, and he was evacuating before you found Min. You saw Bangzi leave. You've heard Bryn talk about the fact that the Sons of Ivaldi were stealing the secrets of the Skuld, who were the techno-priests who ran that facility. You know that those priests were the ones who had devised Thought and Memory Drive by cutting loose the ravens from Odin. And you also know that inadvertently, they cut loose Odin's wolves, Geri and Freki. And you have seen those said same wolves cavorting with Bangzi as his spirit animals. So make of that what you will. Sitting in your seat of the Norns, able to peer over the realm towards Helpmakar, you can see clearly, despite the fact that it is still the polar night and incredibly dark, that the town has been placed under martial law and there's a strict curfew in force. Now, you do have the town map and the locations remain the same, but Helpmakar is now patrolled heavily by the new converts to the Church of the 1-0, the Church of the 1-2, and they're all doing the quick step around town. The church of the 1-0, these heavily augmented overclocked, there appear to be at least 35, perhaps 50 soldiers in the garrison. Now, the Church of the 1-0 itself has been constructed quickly and elegantly on the foundations of the Temple of the Bear, replacing that structure. And you can see that perhaps there are around 60 survivors, 60 townspeople, including Solved Cooking Kettle and including Gunnar Weatherbag, who are holed up in the church, herded into the church, perhaps for use as bargaining chips. The Firefox Institute itself appears to be protected by drones, or to use the Norse term, drin. They are at roof level, 50 yards apart, forming a moving cordon that starts and ends at the town's power station. So there is an aerial flotilla that is monitoring for incursions. All of the rest of the buildings in town are partially boarded up, or like the Temple of the Bear, have been burned to the ground. The Rowderson Hotel is also boarded up, and you remember that many moons ago you moved into Bjarni Bjarnason's shack. That was fortunately already burned down before you left town. All of those trapper cabins are now just derelict, tumbled down, or outright destroyed.
So Eir will describe all this while he's seeing it. If they see us coming, they might kill the townsfolk in the church. That's kind of the impression I'm getting. How close can we get before they see us, I wonder? Gigi, you're a tactical genius. I'm sure you have an excellent plan.
Well, if our little friend, whom turned dark side, light side, then dark side again, had anything valuable to share, it's that Bangzi appears to already know we're coming. And from what you've described, patrols in the town, I believe they've already expect us to arrive. So if they were going to kill the villagers, they would have done it already.
Okay.
That's my view.
We just ride into town and let the games begin, or...
Well, we need an army, so the Isbjorn is one, then we need your people to agree, it's two. I'd prefer not to have the Jotnar help, because they are detestable beings that I'll leave it at that.
Agreed.
But yes, and the eagles and the...
Yes. the eagles and the dwarves, yes.
They create a distraction. We go into the facility. We find the other head of the raven to return to Odin and hopefully prevent... Do we want to prevent Ragnarok? That doesn't sound very Viking of us. Shouldn't we welcome it with open arms? Shouldn't we precipitate Ragnarok?
Do we want... Wow, that's a good question. Do we want the sons of Ivaldi to become gods?
No.
No. Is there any way that we can get them out of the way and we get to the make me a god machine?
Your divinatory spell enables you to work out that the new computer, the new supercomputer, MIM 2.0 that has been grafted in secrecy is to be found in the subterranean basement of the Firefox Institute. However, you cannot peer further because it appears that Bangzi Avalison has shielded the area. Because you are able to scry and peer and eavesdrop, you are able to listen in as some of his students are discussing the conundrum that they face because the supercomputer is effectively offline or not working completely because it doesn't have its RAM, its memory, its moon in skull. The Imperial fleet has been grounded, and that is going to cause all kinds of problems for the sons of Ivaldi. Also explains why you weren't met with another Dreki or warship as you were when you found your way to their military base. The fleet is unable to move and is basically stuck in dock.
Okay. Yeah, Eir would like to ask a question to the seer in his ear. Would the Doc Alfar, we spoke to previously, agree to help us if they are gain the deed, the mineral rights for everything below the surface, leaving our new Jarl in charge of the same territory on the surface? Would they go for that?
No.
Oop. Worth a try.
See, I'm trying to have my cake and eat it too, right? I'm like, yeah, let's do all four.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. Yeah, how do we all get cake and eat it too?
And whilst that is, you know, like some kumbaya, it's
Yeah, it's not gonna happen. I think Eir is not particularly bothered if his people want him dead because they didn't like him much to start with. But it would be nice to have their army and to be able to attack the underground facility from underground. That would be helpful. Do you think we can do it with just the Icebjorn, Gigi?
Let's see. Well, because remember, the Jotnar have a disdain for the Jotnar. Mm-hmm. So that's a no-go for Gigi right off the bat. So the Icebjorn's kind of the only option with Gigi becoming the Jarl of everything and trying to cobble everything together. Going back to what the group was supposed to witness with the rune master who detonated a star to stop the Orkneyas and then bring that information forward to prevent Ragnarok from happening is what Mim told us, right? That's what Mim was saying.
Oh, like, yes, right.
I want you to They're supposed to prevent it. So we're supposed to prevent. So the question is, does Mim want us to prevent Ragnarok by destroying MIM 2 or by empowering MIM 2 to turn online?
No, MIM 2 will make a Ragnarok happen.
Unbelievable.
Right?
Yeah.
The crucial thing that MIM had said to you was to return thought and memory to their rightful owner, otherwise past, present, and future would collapse in upon themselves.
Ah, yes. Yes. That would be bad.
So they have been stolen and used for the creation of this new supercomputer in Odin's image, but it's not necessarily a legitimate enterprise. I will offer you this. Oldinger, the Alfar who you had mistakenly assumed had died but had merely fled into the wilderness to avoid any repercussions or tussles with the Sons of Ivaldi, he says, "Oh, brother, brother, the land deed, it is such a wonder. It compels me to conduct thee forthwith to our eldest, the venerable sower of these grand and secluded woods. With the Ispion as an escort, they take you through the Ifir Forest, and in the heart of this dense and dark polar forest, you come to an ancient tree, towering and majestic. Its massive trunk is gnarled and thick with age, having survived centuries in this harsh, freezing climate. The bark is deeply furrowed and covered with a layer of frost, and around its base the undergrowth is sparse, unable to compete with the colossal roots that spread like a network of history into the frozen earth. This ancient sentinel, cloaked in perpetual twilight, exudes an aura of timeless strength and enduring mystery. And so you're quite surprised when it says,
"You fucking idiots! I've been waiting for 1,500 years for you to show up. Luckily, that's enough time to come up with a plan."
The Vikings and Valkyries podcast is hammered together by a dedicated team of Skalds and Smiths. Please don't forget to like, share, and sacrifice to the old gods.